Welcome in on my first show in March. In like a lion, out like a lamb, they say, but it sounds like we're going to have a little more lion before we have some lamb. We have a very interesting show this Sunday. We're going to be talking to Scott Turow. He's been a friend of the show. He wrote Presumed Innocent, which to me is probably the best legal thriller ever. It was just redone with Jake Gyllenhaal. If you haven't seen that, you should check it out. It's really great. But he has written a new book, came out in January. I read it in like 2 days. It's fabulous. And we're going to be talking to him about that, about authoring books and about the practice of law in general. Should be fun. And then, I don't know about you, but I have been fascinated by the Jack the Ripper story. Who was Jack the Ripper? Probably the most popular or unpopular whodunit that was never solved. But I don't know if you saw, but recently there has been a pretty definitive discovery that a certain gentleman was responsible for these crimes, these horrific crimes. And we're going to be talking to the guy who actually was responsible for it. He actually commissioned all of the DNA testing that led to this discovery of who Jack the Ripper really was. And then I'll be taking your legal questions at the end, probably around 4:30. But now let's get started with our first guest. I don't know if you saw this, but WTDW aired a documentary recently called Firsthand Peacekeepers. It's about people in Chicagoland who really work to create peace in the neighborhoods and to do things to reduce crime and to ameliorate crime. And one of the episodes is about a wonderful project called the North Lawndale Restorative Community Court. It's the first of its kind in Illinois. And it is a way to deal with crime and the accused where it helps the community, it helps the accused, and it doesn't throw people in jail forever, which in the cases of some of these young men is a very, very good thing. With us to discuss this is the presiding judge, Judge Patricia Spratt, who heads up this program and is going to talk a little bit about how this is really helping our community. Judge Spratt, how are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
Thank you for coming in and doing this with us. You've been a judge for over 10 years, and you do a lot of volunteer work and charitable work and sit on many boards and charitable organizations. And I've always admired the fact that you really care about our communities, not just the community you live in, but the communities that are, traumatized, is I think the word that you use. Can you tell our listeners what it means to have a restorative justice court?
Restorative justice is not at all like the traditional criminal court. It's not accusatory. There's not a trial. I tell the young people that come into the North Lawndale Restorative Justice Court that one of the main differences is they get to tell their story coming into the court. If they stayed in the criminal court and followed their lawyer's instructions, which is you're not going to take the stand, we're going to make the state prove its case with its evidence, not with you. If that's what happens and you're convicted, the accused doesn't get a chance to tell anything about his or her life until they're at sentencing, when the judge says, young man, young woman, is there anything you want me to know? It's too late. They've been convicted. Coming into the court, we want to hear their story in the beginning, because when they were arrested, whatever they were doing that brought them to the attention of the police that resulted in arrest, that didn't happen in a vacuum. There's something going on in their life. As I say in the documentary, maybe it's something that happened that day or 2 weeks ago or their entire life, but there's something that some part of their life they're trying to fill in by engaging in this criminal conduct, whatever it is, and we want to reverse that.
And we're going to get to this probably after the break. I don't want anyone to think, because I hear my listeners say, oh, this is like coddling criminals, like, there's too much crime, we got to put everyone in jail. Well, tell our listeners a little bit about the parameters of who is eligible for this kind of thing. I mean, we're not talking about people accused of murder, right?
No.
These are more nonviolent crimes,
correct?
Nonviolent
offenses.
Okay.
There are four restorative justice in Cook County right now. I'm North Lawndale. There's Avondale, there's Inglewood, and there's Sauk Village. And we all operate on the same principle. We operate a little differently, but on the same principle. And our participants come to us from the criminal courts. The state's attorneys at the initial appearance court have been instructed to look for persons who are between 18 and 26, emerging adults who their prefrontal cortex is still emerging. They've been charged with a nonviolent offense. They can have background, but it has to be nonviolent. They live, work, or worship in the community where the court is. so that it's their neighbors who have to do with their restoration, and they're willing to accept responsibility for the charge that they were accused of.
So these are people who are redeemable. I mean, I hate to be label it, maybe you wouldn't use that word, but these are kids that, to me, you don't want to throw them away at this point. You know, they could go either way, you know, and you're going to be talking a little bit about some of the successes you've had and some of the examples that are going to be really, really compelling. Let's take a break, but please remember that if you want to see this documentary, it's really good. WTTW, it's called Firsthand Peacekeepers, and North Lawndale Restorative Community Court is just one of those segments. You're listening to WGN. We are here talking to Judge Patricia Spratt, who is the presiding judge of the North Lawndale Restorative Community Court. And this is a really particularly special court that deals with young people who are accused of nonviolent crimes, who want to take responsibility for their crimes, but they kind of deal with things in a more holistic way. But I think the best way to do this, Judge Spratt, is to try to maybe give an example of somebody who's been through the process, what is history was, and how the process worked.
Well, the example that's used in the documentary is a fellow by the name of Tyshun Rule. He came into the court charged with unlawful. At the time, the charge was unlawful use of a weapon. Now it's unlawful possession of a weapon. So I don't remember what brought him to the attention of the police officer. It could have been a traffic stop, but in that, whatever it was, incident to that, what the police officer found the gun, and he did not have a FOID card, so he was immediately charged with unlawful use of a weapon. And because that's a nonviolent offense and he met all the other parameters, he was referred to the Restorative Justice Court in North Lawndale. Once he got into the court, I explained to him what we expect of our participants and what our participants can expect of us, that this is not an accusatory court, that we're not going to shake our fingers at them and say, shame, shame, don't do that again. We are on, all of us that are at the table, at the stakeholder table, are on his side. We want to see him succeed. We get him a case manager. There's two organizations in North Lawndale that supply the case managers. There's the Lawndale Christian Legal Center, and then there's the UCAN Center. And, oh, St. Anthony's provides a case manager, too. Case manager, I tell them, is their guardian angel, stays with them through the process. Any questions they have, any concerns, any fears, whatever, take it to your case manager. They also get two circle keepers, and members of the community join the circle process as well, because it is a community court. And in the circle process, they work out whatever it was that was going on when they were arrested, and they tell their life story and what got them to where they're going. And inevitably, they've lived all their life in this community, which is a traumatized, terribly traumatized community, a lot of crime, a lot of gun violence, gangs, and the gang memberships have changed over the years. There were a couple of very large and strong gangs, but they all dissolved when, I think it was Jody Weiss became superintendent and disavowed the gang treaties. So now what we have is block mobs. It's a different group on every block. And you have to be careful if you're not a member of that block, where you walk, what color you wear, how you hold your hands as you're walking through the community. You certainly, mom and dad and grandma can't sit on their front porch sipping lemonade on a warm summer's evening watching their children play hopscotch on the sidewalk. You don't see chalked up sidewalks in North Lawndale. Nobody wants to be outside. They definitely don't want to be in their front room because bullets come through. So they all, to a person, the ones that come to us with guns, they have a gun because everybody in the community has a gun and they need it to protect themselves. So this young man came in. He was really excited to start in the program. Once he got circle keepers, and it takes as long as it takes. There's no timeline on how long it takes you to get through our court. We like you to get through in a year, but we don't press you because everybody's different. In the circle process, they begin to shed the layers of emotional body armor that keeps them acting like they have attitude. They come, when I see them for the first time in the courtroom, they're all bound up and, you know, looking like tough guy, and they're just going to challenge me from here. Well, that wears off. It dissolves during the circle process because they make relationships with the circle keepers and everybody in the community. They talk about what their potential is. I urge them, if you've got something that you're handy at doing, talk about it. Maybe that's a potential that you can turn into a life's work. They talk about what they can do, what they want to do, what they need, and ultimately, in those discussions, they form a contract with the community. They will perform these certain goals to reach this ultimate goal. And one of the ultimate goals is to repair the harm to the community, repair the harm to a victim if there is one, and certainly to repair the harm to themselves.
So for instance, in this case, maybe there was no, quote, victim, but, you know, let's just say that someone, spray painted something, let's say, right, and the owner of the store had to spend $500 to have it sandblasted. Would that be something that would be part of the contract? That how are you going to pay this back? How are you going to make this community whole? How are you going to make this particular store owner whole?
Well, we would like that to be part of the discussion before we get to the contract.
Yep.
We'll ask a victim or a victim representative, a corporate representative. We did have that almost exact scenario. A young man had defaced the wall inside one of the subways. He didn't think it was defacement. It was street art.
Yeah. Right.
And the representative from the CTA, we asked, do you want to sit in the circle process? And typically they say no, but they want them to pay for the repair of the damage. So then we make that part of the agreement, the repair of harm agreement.
I would imagine, and I'm speculating, I have done some volunteer work with disadvantaged kids in the literacy field in the area of kids who just are, you know, kids, when I say kids, young adults who got all the way through high school perhaps or got released from prison and they can't read. They're completely illiterate. And, of course, you know, that prevents them from having meaningful work or whatever. But I just found that, you know, just paying attention to them. I mean, it seems that many of them come from families that don't pay attention to them. I'll just say it that way. And when you actually look at what they like to do or encourage their interests, it's like you spark something in them. And, you know, you and I were raised probably in good homes where when we had an interest in something, someone noticed it and cultivated it, or at least didn't discourage it. So, when you see those things, you know, and I was watching that documentary, your segment, and you could see the change in him and even his body language and his trust level for the adults around him.
Right. You're quite right. They come to us and they've come from mostly broken homes, mostly homes where there have been other family members who are in gangs, parents or older brothers and sisters, and maybe some who've tried to use them as lookout for those who are committing crimes. And they're not, because of the household situation, which is not a pleasant one generally, they're not encouraged to study. They're just encouraged to get that high school diploma and then get out and make money for us, or go out now and make the money, deal in drugs and make the money now. That's the lifestyle. That's what is called normal.
So tell me about, you know, tell me about what the success rate is. And, you know, again, you know, that numbers aren't everything. And to me, you save one person and you change his way. Instead of putting him in jail, having him come out, he's now behind in child support. He's now never going to get a job because he's got a felony conviction. He's now alienated from his family, his community. Instead, we have him go back into the community with a new attitude and a new chance. So. How do you assess the success rate, and do you have numbers that would bear that out?
The chief judge engaged a sociologist to do a study of the recidivist rates of the young people who've come through the four restorative justice courts in Cook County versus young people who are in like communities with like crime statistics and like arrest records, but not have the option to go to a restorative justice court. They stay in the criminal court. And what the sociologist who conducted the study found, there's a those who come through the restorative justice courts have a 13.3% recidivist rate versus a 65% recidivist rate of those from like communities who do not have restorative justice available to them.
Well, that's a pretty good statistic.
I think that's pretty darn fabulous.
I think it's really darn. And, you know, when these – I'm just curious. So when these young men, usually young men, but I know there are women that come through as well. There's one in the documentary. Do they maintain relationships then with these people who they've met through this process? Do they keep them as mentors and maybe like sponsor? I feel like a sponsor almost, right?
Some do. Some stay in touch with their circle keepers, especially because that's where the emotional work is done in the circle. Some stay in contact with their case managers. Others just go out and go do what they're going to do. Finish their schooling or get a job, or they leave the community because they're gang related and they can't stay. They didn't work an exit from the gang. They didn't
extricate themselves from that bad environment.
Right. So they leave the community.
And so, you know, what would you say to people who, as I alluded to earlier, who are saying, well, you know, this is coddling criminals, you know, you got to lock people up, this is kind of the 1970s hippy-dippy, you know, way of dealing with it, and it's really not the way we should solve crime in Chicago. To these people, to your detractors, what would you say?
I would say, okay, let's say that it is, but it works. Period. It saves lives. There's dinosaurs out there that I can't lure into the family of understanding how well it works. Come and watch us work. Court is open. Circles are not. Circles are confidential, so you can't sit in and watch the circle, but you can watch us engage with our participants in open court.
That is something that I really would like to do. And if anybody wants to help out or come and watch, how would they get in touch with the restorative court where you're presiding judge?
We sit in court at the UCAN Center in North Lawndale. I think that's 3506 Fillmore. I think that's the address. We're there every Thursday. The court stakeholders go into staffing at 9:30. That's where the case managers tell me how the participants are getting along through the program. That is confidential. But while staffing is going on, in another area at the UCAN Center, there's a talking circle going on where everybody who's come to court just answers some really interesting questions. It's not... We're not going to delve into secret parts of your life, but you have an opportunity to get to sit in that circle and know who the people are that are coming to the court. And once we're done with staffing and we open court, then it is open to the public.
I will also be able to direct you if you want to send me an email at hello@KarenConti.com. Judge Patricia Spratt, thank you so much for joining us, and keep up the good work and come back and tell us some more success stories. How does that sound?
Anytime you like. Thank you.
All right. Well, you take care. When we come back, we are going to be talking to the ultimate Jack the Ripper expert, the one responsible for determining who Jack the Ripper really is, on the Karen Conti Show on WGN.
Hey, this is John Williams. If you have